listening to the Swim Out Podcast, a show about the wonderful world of outdoor swimming.
Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, Vicky.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of the Swim Out Podcast, where we'll be talking all about peace, swimming, and, well, actually, our furry four-legged friends.
First up, we have the absolutely legendary long-distance swimmer Lynn Cox describing her lifetime of record-breaking swims.
This is so much fun. It's really hard, and it's always changing because the currents and the water temperature and everything else are not stable, but that made it really exciting.
Next, another legend and passionate swimmer, Jackie Cabell, talking about the war in Ukraine.
To watch what's going on over there, it's just so heartbreaking. And people say, well, I don't know if I can watch it. But I think we have to, actually. We can't turn away from what's actually happening over there. And we can't believe it's happened in 2022. You know, it's just awful.
And we hear from a listener who's been swimming around Manhattan.
It was a fantastic swim with phenomenal views, particularly in the Hudson, with the Manhattan skyline to focus on. I enjoyed it so much that suffice to say I'm already thinking of doing it again.
And we're going to share our own favourite swim spots.
And a quick reminder to you all to give us some likes and feedback, please, on your podcast provider's app. Good ratings give the podcast a higher profile and more people get to listen.
So, Jonathan Cowie, you're here with me today. It's very exciting. You're a print journalist. You've been working on Outdoor Swimmer magazine for the last 7 years, but you're going to give radio a try. How are you liking it so far?
So far, so good. I've been learning lots of different skills. So if you hear lots of like bangs and sound effects, that'll be me.
And how did you get started in open water journalism? Were you a swimmer?
I was a swimmer first and journalist second. So I started open water swimming about 14 years ago. And at that time, I was working in publishing, but I was working in the production side for a legal publishing company. And I saw an advert for a job at Outdoor Swimmer magazine, and I applied. And I think I got the job mostly because I was a swimmer rather than any journalistic skills that I didn't have at that point. So it's been a learning process.
And what would you say is your most interesting ever swim?
I've never done any long marathon swims like the Channel like you have. So all my swims have been much shorter. But my favourite, the most interesting swims, I think the quirky swims. So swimming from Finland to Sweden under the midnight sun, where you cross the Arctic Circle and you end up finishing before you started. That was quite interesting.
That sounds really amazing. I really like the sound of that one.
Not quite as beautiful, but swimming in at the back of an industrial estate in Prague in February, in skins, in a river, and the water was about 1 degree, and it was for a triathlon, which was a cold water swim, a run and a cross-country ski. That was quite fun.
That sounds like quite an event to me.
Yeah.
Well, we're very, very pleased to have you here today. It's really, really, really lovely. So we decided that we'd like to share with you our favourite swim spots. So we're describing our journey to get to our swim. Let's start with Jonathan's in the Lake District.
And walking down the path from the lay-by where I parked down to the edge of the lake, and it's a path through some trees next to a stream. You hear the birds in the trees, and as you get further down the path, there's a little waterfall. We'll be able to hear more water in a second. Stood here by a series of four little waterfalls, and no one else around. Just nice just to pause and stand here or sit here a little bit. Beech leaves are just coming out, so they're that really vivid green. There's some yew trees, some holly trees, some oaks above us, and just sit here and just listen to the water. Then turn the corner and you can see the lake ahead of us. It's very misty today, it's quite cloudy, so you can't see the mountains at the north end, you can't see the Langdales. They're all shrouded in cloud. You can see the other side just about. There's like trees on the other side, treescape. But again, it's shrouded in mist, it's quite eerie. Just crossing another little stream to the boathouse, which is where I get changed. And I'm stood on the jetty now, and there's no one here. Usually there's other swimmers, but today there's no one here. But you can just hear the sound of the water lapping against the jetty, and then the echo of the swallows in the boathouse. There's two ducks floating by, but that's my only company. It's very peaceful. So now it's time to swim. There's a slight drizzle, so I'm already slightly wet, but time to get in and wake up properly.
What a lovely tranquil spot for a dip, and I really love that dripping noise. I'm beyond excited to introduce this next guest, whose books have inspired a whole generation of swimmers. Jonathan spoke to Lynn Cox on Zoom from her house in California.
Lynn is a record-breaking marathon swimmer and all-round open water swimming legend, whose swimming career has been defined by breaking down borders and inspiring change. Her historic Bering Strait swim from the United States to the Soviet Union in 1987 helped usher in a new era of communication between those two superpowers. Also a writer, Lynn's new book, Tales of Al, draws together two of my favourite things, swimming and dogs. Lynn, welcome to the Swim Out podcast.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. I really love being here and being able to talk to you today.
I wonder if we can start by going back to the beginning of your swimming career, setting world records in the English Channel, the Catalina Channel and Cook Strait. How did it feel to be a teenager doing these amazing record-breaking swims?
You know, I was so lucky because I was training in Long Beach, California, and I had an Olympic coach, and there were swimmers from all over the world that were training with this coach. And so I had a chance to see what it was like to train really hard and what it was also like to have these huge goals of trying to be the best in the world. And I was really lucky because my coach realized that I was not a distance pool swimmer. There wasn't even a mile in the Olympics for women. So he was the one that encouraged me to start doing open water swimming. And when I entered the Pacific Ocean and did my first open water race that was 3 miles long, I wound up winning the women's division and coming in third in the men's. And I realized that this is so much fun. It's really hard and it's always changing because the currents and the water temperature and everything else are not stable, but that made it really exciting. And so I went to my coach and asked if he would talk to the other coach who was training a group of kids to swim across the Catalina Channel. So what I was doing was very one step after the other. I went to this other coach, he let me train with him. We trained for Catalina together. My goal, though, when I was 9 years old, was to swim the English Channel and to break the world record. So at age 14, I'd done the Catalina Channel, which was about 27 miles long with all the currents and tidal changes, and then went off to England to swim the English Channel with my mom as my coach and my support person on board the boat. And it was so exciting. You know, to go to Shakespeare Beach at night, at midnight, and wait for the pilot boat to arrive and seeing the lights on the horizon and sort of watching the boat slowly approach and then getting in the water and starting to swim. It was, you know, to have a huge dream And then to be able to suddenly realize it. And then the reality of, oh my gosh, I've got to swim hard for hours and hours and hours and hours. And it was thrilling to break the world record for men and women. And to realize that, you know, even though I was only 15 years old, it was possible. And it was so disheartening when Davis Hart from Springfield, Mass broke my time the following year, actually that year. So the following year, I went back and swam it again and swam further by 3 miles and broke his time by 20 minutes. So that was the beginning of, I want to do these big channels. But I also realized that, you know, I could swim this channel over and over. And what do you learn from that? At least for me, I wanted to do things that had never been done before. Who could do better than the English Channel at the entree point, you know?
Especially at that age.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, there was a great book called It's Cold in the Channel by Commander Fosberg, a British author. And he wrote it, I think, in the 1950s. And it became my Bible for open water swimming because he described how to train for cold, but also what the lochs were like to swim with in Scotland and what it was like to swim like Windermere and all of these different places that still are fascinating to me. And hopefully one day I'll get there and be able to explore them.
I live 20 minutes from Windermere. So,
oh, wow.
If you're ever up here, then come and swim it.
Okay, I'll come and get you.
Great. So then after the English Channel and Catalina, then you did Cook Strait. So the right. First woman to swim the Cook Strait. How was that as a swim?
Oh my gosh, it was probably one of the most difficult swims I'd ever done because I was expecting, okay, it's only 10 miles to swim from the North to South Island and I train and it takes me 4 hours to do 10 miles. So maybe with currents, it'll take me 5 hours. Well, the currents were really strong than I was swimming and so strong that after 5 hours of swimming, I was further from the finish than when we'd started. So instead of a 5 hour swim, it was more than a 12 hour swim through some of the roughest waters in the world at a time where, you know, we didn't have the ability to check out the weather or the weather from satellites. And so the conditions kept getting worse, but we were lucky because Air New Zealand was flying the route between the North and South Island and they were monitoring the weather for their flights. So they started radioing to the radio station and the radio station in Wellington was radioing us to give us updates on things. And so probably around 9 hours into the swim, things started to settle down a little bit. And the waves had been 7 to 9 feet high. And by then they were like probably 3 or 4 feet high. But the frightening thing about that swim was that it's a major area for sharks. And the sun had set behind the South Island as I was coming into shore. And I was just really eager to finish before it was shark feeding time.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So tell me about the Bering Strait swim and how that came about. And like, how did you, I'm interested how you went from breaking records and doing marathon swims for times and records to swimming to inspire like political change. What was the thinking behind that?
Well, actually, my dad was the one that showed me on a map that the United States and Soviet Union, now Russia, were only 2.7 miles apart up in the Bering Strait area. And so he said, why don't you think about swimming from one country to the other to show that the two superpowers are 2.7 miles apart? It's not the distance from Washington, D.C. to Moscow. We are neighbors in the world. And, you know, this was, my dad was a conservative physician. My mom was conservative as well. You know, they were, this was just something that was so far out there in their thinking. But at the time, it was still the middle of the Cold War. And I think my dad was such a smart guy to talk about how do you diminish tensions between countries. So I started looking at that swim very closely and saw that not only are we 2.7 miles apart from Russia, the international date line runs between the two countries. So when you cross the international date line, which is also at the border, you're going from the present into the future. So I thought symbolically, it's all about reaching out to the Russians. It's all about the Soviets then, but Russians now. It's all about trying to bridge the distance. And so I started training for it with that idea of maybe it would be possible. But the idea too was that I would wear a swimsuit, swim cap and goggles, because it would be about the human ability and the human reach, not about the technology. And the water temperature was 38 degrees, I think around 3 or 4 degrees centigrade. You might want to check that, but it was cold, and it was the coldest water I would ever swim in. So it was a huge leap for me to swim in water that cold, but I felt like I'm doing everything I can in my own way to try to diminish tensions. And to, as Glasnost was coming into light with Gorbachev, the idea of openness, this would be the openness from our side. And so it was absolutely fantastic when Gorbachev gave the approval for the swim. And then I made the swim across, and I actually wrote about it in detail in my book, Swimming to Antarctica. But just a few months later, when President Gorbachev and President Reagan were meeting at the White House to sign the INF missile treaty, President Gorbachev stood up and toasted the swim. And he said how close to each other the two countries are and how our relations were improving. And so I realized that, you know, as individuals, we can do things that make positive differences in the world. And I was so fortunate that somebody, after 11 years of trying, I was able to get permission to do the swim and get support from both the US and the Soviet Union to do it. And now, I mean, things have changed so much in the world. And, you know, it was really a lot about citizen diplomacy, about just being everyday people reaching out and doing this. My team were composed of Americans and a really well-known British physician, William Keating, who was the world's expert in hypothermia. And he came along to make sure that I was safe during the swim, and also to record my core temperature to make sure that you could get other data about somebody swimming in water that cold. So it was an incredible team. And now, years later, I mean, April 4th, I wound up gathering a group of friends and new friends all around the world to do a swim for Ukraine in unity for what was going on there, but also to say we can swim for them, but please also donate to your favorite charity to help the people, the swimmers, and generally the people throughout Ukraine, because what's going on there is not okay. And we can do something about that.
Yeah. And that's something I wanted to ask about, actually. So, yeah, seeing the situation in Ukraine, it's kind of disheartening, because you just kind of think, what can I do to help? And I've been following the Swimmers for Peace in Ukraine on Facebook. I mean, what would you say to people and to swimmers of how they can help?
Well, what I asked people to do on April 4th anyway was to put on something blue and yellow and do a swim wherever they were, and then to post pictures all over Facebook or Instagram or wherever, Twitter, and to announce what they were doing. So there were people that did that everywhere. But I also asked them, you know, I vetted something like 4 different major charities and said, please, in your own way, give what you can. And so for me, I gave to Doctors Without Borders, because this is a group that I believe in and I've done things with before. But I really think everyone has their own way that they can connect, like they can help, their own creative ways. And my idea was that I've done this through swimming, that's my language, but there are other languages. And so whatever creative way you can do, whatever means you can to support Ukraine, and to also say to Russia, this is not okay. It's important to do that.
Yeah. I mean, think about this, the swims that you did after the Bering Strait. So like the Beagle Channel, swimming from east to west Germany, the Gulf of Aqaba. There's, you know, you have a history of doing these kind of political activist swims. For you, what do you think is the link between swimming and political activism? What kind of change can you bring about through that?
I think that when people tend to be political activists, it's something that's so much in their heart and soul that they want to explain to other people that something needs to change and things are not right. And so they're physically out there protesting. But for me, swimming is a way to gather people together, to bring people together, to bridge borders. And so for me, it's a way of collaborating with other people. And it's so exciting because, for instance, when I was going to swim the Gulf of Aqaba between Egypt and Israel and Jordan to show the progress of peace in the Middle East at that point, I had to work with the Egyptians, the Israelis, and the Jordanians. But in addition to that, they all had to work together to make it to happen. And by sheer coincidence, when I did the segment of the swim from Israel to Jordan, the border between those two countries was just opening. And that area had all been mined before. So as I was swimming, you could hear the mines exploding. And to me, it was like fireworks celebrating this change. So, I mean, there are little things that happen like that where you just go, oh my gosh, you know, sometimes you work so hard, you try so hard, you train so hard, you try to reach out to so many people. And there are so many no's along the way, like, no, that's not possible. It's too cold. It's too far. It's politically, unbelievably, you can't think about doing that. And then suddenly you're doing something and everything is magnified. And you see it as, yes, it worked, but it even worked better than I thought it could.
Yeah. And I guess which of your swims have you been the most proud of? I think it's had the most lasting legacy.
Actually, sounds really strange in a way, but I think each swim I'm really proud of, because when I set the goal for swimming Catalina, I was 14 years old, and it was a huge goal to think about, you know, swimming 27 miles at that age, and then to achieve it, and then to have this dream to swim the English Channel, and then to achieve that. And I think that the reality is that I couldn't have gone on to swim the Straits of Magellan or the Cape of Good Hope or many of the other firsts that I did if I hadn't built on the previous swim. And I think that one of the things that is really difficult now is that a lot of people will decide, oh, I'm training right now and I want to do a 6-mile swim in Scotland. And after that, I'm planning to swim the English Channel. And I think that there are many more steps in there that people tend to try to omit because they want to get it off their checklist. And I think that one of the things that I'm trying to say to people is, hey, you know, I started swimming when I was doing these swims when I was 14, and I'm now 65. So I've had a good run, and I'm hoping that at least 30 more years to go. So don't do it too quickly, because if you don't do the adequate work ahead of time, then it may not happen. And then you're trying to do something over and over again. And I've seen that happen with a number of swimmers, where one swimmer I know finally did it. It took her 20 years, but, you know, maybe it didn't have to take that long. You know, maybe it did, though. You know, who's to say? But I think it's better to be overprepared than to try to leap off a step, you know?
Yeah. And moving on to your new book, Tales of Al, it tells the story of a Newfoundland dog training to be a lifeguard, as well as weaving in the stories of other dogs in your swimming life. It's a lovely book, especially if you're a dog lover like me. So I swim with my dog most days. What for you are the joys of swimming with dogs?
Oh, I just love that when you're swimming with a dog, this is too cold, or I don't feel like going in yet. Or, you know, they're like, okay, let's go now. What are you waiting for? So there's this exuberance and eagerness just to get in the water. And often I'll swim now with friends, but they'll have their schedules and they'll be working and stuff will happen. But you can just say to dog, do you want to go for a swim? And there's like other out the door. And the other thing is that, you know, swimming back and forth, doing laps is really great. There's meditation that comes from it, and you can work on your times and get stronger and faster and all that. But I just love to get at a tennis ball and throw it and try to swim faster than the dog.
Which is quite difficult. My dog's quite fast.
You know, you get to play again and just to have fun and do something that you don't all the time do.
I think one of my favorite, like almost like as little asides in the book, is that teaching dogs to swim is on your CV.
A big part of what I wrote about is not just about, you know, swimming with dogs, but it's also about safety for dogs and for kids, and for kids learning to swim and for dogs learning to swim. So there is that core story about Al, who's an Italian water rescue dog in training to become one of these elite dogs that leap out of helicopters to save people. But there's also those elements of how are they working with the dogs there and how are the dogs learning? And my method for teaching kids and adults all my life has been very positive reinforcement, very gentle, support the dog, support the child, support the adult until they gain the strength to feel more confident to then pull on their own and then eventually learn to swim.
The stories in the book of the lifeguard dogs are amazing. So what can lifeguard dogs do that human lifeguards can't?
Well, I think that one of the things that I learned from the Italian water rescue dogs, the instructors and their owners, was that by just patrolling the beach, they had more eyes on the water. And the dogs have been trained to look for signals of somebody drowning. So in July, there was a group of 14 kids that were on inflatable rafts that had been pulled offshore by a current or by the wind. And the owners and two Labradors saw this happening and went out and were able to pull in all 14 kids. So Labradors usually are able to pull in two people at a time, but maybe more small children. And Newfoundlands are able to pull in up to six people at a time. Although there's a clip on Superpower Dogs, where an IMAX program, where you see one Labrador pulling in a boat of Newfoundlands and Golden Retrievers and Labradors and German Shepherds that are all participants in this school. So their ability to pull weight through the water is incredible. And they actually seem to love it. I mean, it's like, okay, I'll do this. You know, it's part of training, but you can see that they enjoy it.
So finally, you're a marathon swimmer, ice swimmer, swim with dogs. What does swimming mean to you now?
Swimming to me now means it's the part of my life that I am so happy to be able to do each day. You know, when I'm going to be on this book tour for 6 weeks, I am looking for any backyard pool or motel pool or any waterway that I can just take a dip in, because there's so much activity in traveling and from going from place to place to place and meeting enthusiastic people and meeting people that want to share their stories with me as much as I want to be able to share my stories. So for me, over the course of the summer, it's going to be a place where I can just sort of slow down, meditate, cool off, and think about what it is I want to do next and who I want to meet and, you know, sort of clear my mind. And I think that with swimming, at least for me, there's sort of different seasons of this, different ways that you work through the seasons. So spring right now, you're just feeling this great exuberance for an energy because the water's warm and now you can swim longer and further and you can sort of sustain that for summer. And then you feel the temperatures start to drop and the days are getting shorter and the swims are getting shorter. And by winter, they become short again. So there's a cyclical thing that goes on with me, but also through the years, I mean, I've had those swims where they've been world record breaking swims and doing first. And now I swim for the sheer enjoyment of swimming. And I think that I've sort of come first full circle, because that's how I began, with my parents launching us into the pond in Snow Pond in Maine, where we just started this all out as a family. So I love to swim. I love to travel and swim. And I'm hoping to get to Britain and swim all over there one day.
Oh, we hope you make it across to see us too. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real privilege and a real joy to speak with you.
Likewise, Jonathan. Thanks so much for your time and so much for your great questions.
Thank you.
Look forward to swimming with you.
Wow, Jonathan, getting to swim with Lynn Cox. What an amazing treat. Her new book, Tales of Al, is available in all good bookshops and, of course, online. She's doing a book tour in the US, but sadly not scheduled to come back to the UK yet.
Staying on the theme of swimming for peace, Vicky popped down to Kent for a swim and a chat with one of my old friends from Tooting Lido.
So I'm here in person with Jackie Cabell, who I first met on the beach in Dover in 2019, where she regularly hangs out during the season, telling funny stories, swimming and eating ice cream. She was declared an honour swimmer in 2020 in the Ice Swimming Hall of Fame and listed as one of the 50 most impressive open water women swimmers in 2015. Jackie Cabell, swimmer extraordinaire and most famous for holding the record for the slowest successful one-way swim across the English Channel in 28 hours and 44 minutes in 2010. Welcome back to Swim Out, Jackie.
Oh, thank you, Vicky.
So you've been at the forefront of making a lot of noise about the war in Ukraine with your Facebook page, Swimmers for Peace in Ukraine. Tell me why you're so passionate about Ukraine.
Well, about 20 years ago, I went to Ukraine to deliver aid. And this was in Chernihiv, it was a city near Chernobyl. And I made some friends over there. So I've got that connection, you know. And I think Chernihiv was one of the first cities that the Russian bombed. And to see all the, you know, the terrible destruction and loss of life, it's just really struck a heartstring, really, you know.
So you've still got friends out there?
Yes, yes.
And are you keeping in touch with them?
Yes, I am, on a daily basis, yes.
So. And are they okay?
Yeah, I mean, they're very sort of, they're so brave and stoic, it's unbelievable, really. They never seem to, you know, whinge about the situation. They're just sort of getting on with it, you know, and doing the best they can, really, you know, amongst all the destruction. But they're so brave, it's just unbelievable.
You got to swim the Bering Straits, which was a swim from Russia to Alaska in 2013. Mm. 65 swimmers, mostly from Russia. Are you still in touch with the Russian swimmers?
No, not really. I don't know if it's because they're not on Facebook, but there are one or two that I'm still talking to. Not in the past month, actually. I think one of the swimmers, a Russian swimmer, she was really against what the Russians are doing. She lives in Russia, and she's, you know, the Russians have been really nasty to her. They arrested her because she was on one of the marches, and they've threatened her as well. So that's not nice at all. In fact, they haven't been very nice to me either. So that's upsetting, really, because when we was on the ship crossing the Bering Strait, we was also, you know, there for each other. You know, we was like family.
So you don't really know how they feel about the war because they've just disappeared?
To be honest, I think most of them are for the war. There are a couple that they've obviously, you know, go on Facebook. It's still open for them, and you know, they're up for it. I think obviously they're just being fed propaganda, you know. And if you say, well, you know, hang on a minute, you know, this, you know, you're the aggressor, they won't have it. They just think that, you know, the West are feeding, you know, us propaganda.
I was inspired to take part in the swim on the April the 4th this year, which Lynn Cox, who's another guest today, she started that by asking swimmers simply to swim in blue and yellow. And you pushed this out on the Facebook page, and it was really lovely. What other things are you finding inspiring in these dark days?
To watch what's going on over there, it's just so heartbreaking. And people say, well, I don't know if I can watch it. But I think we have to, actually. We can't turn away from what's actually happening over there, you know. And we can't believe it's happening in 2022. It's like, you know, what happened all those years ago, 70-odd years ago, and we haven't learnt anything from it. You know, it's just awful.
Can you tell the listener how they can get involved?
A couple of months ago when it all started, I mean, everyone was really interested and we raised an awful lot of money. As I say, if we can still keep that going, I mean, I said, one of my friends is going to America and she's swimming around Manhattan Island, and she's raised already a lot of money for the animals out there, because you know, the poor animals, it's just awful. So, yeah, that's Melanie Terrell. So, you know, she's doing a great job as well. And she actually helped me, you know, set the Swimmers for Peace up, you know, especially on Dover Swimmers Beach. So, yeah, she's been marvellous. So it's getting everyone really interested. And as I say, this interest has gone all over the world, really.
So shall we do a little swim for Ukraine now?
Oh, definitely.
I've got my blue costume and my yellow hat.
My costume's dry. It's forever hanging out on the line.
Okay, Jackie, thank you so much. It's so nice to see you again.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Vicky.
We managed to get an update from Mel, who Jackie mentioned had helped set up the Facebook page, and she's raising money for Ukraine herself.
Hi, my name is Melanie Tyrrell. I recently completed the New York Open Water 20 Bridges Swim as a tandem with my friend Gina Harden as part of our quest for the Triple Crown. It was a fantastic swim with phenomenal views, particularly in the Hudson with the Manhattan skyline to focus on, which certainly helped when we encountered a 3-foot swell in the final stages of the swim. I enjoyed it so much that suffice to say I'm already thinking of doing it again. I'm fundraising for a charity called Network for Animals, who have an appeal to help support the many animals affected by the war in Ukraine, and to date have raised over £1,750 for their appeal.
You can find the details of her charity on Facebook via the Swimmers for Peace in Ukraine page. Whilst I was looking around the Facebook page, I came across Helen Korikova, who lives and works in Ukraine and is also a passionate swimmer. She was in Kyiv, but is now moving around. Due to the lack of power and Wi-Fi, she wasn't able to record an interview, but we chatted a lot via email. She told me how every day they get bombed, and in some places there are just no houses left. It's very stressful and difficult to concentrate. She can't swim as the Russians have mined the rivers and the sea, and the pools are all shut. Helen was keen to thank the community on Facebook who help her stay a bit more positive and hopeful for the future. Her anger at the situation was very, very clear, but she is a proud Ukrainian who strongly believes that they will win and beat the invading Russians. Her last correspondence ended, "Once again, many thanks to the entire international community of swimmers for your support for Ukraine. She needs you every day."
Get in touch with the Swim Out podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
So now we're headed to North London to find out where Vicky swims.
Okay, I've got my hat, my goggles, earplugs. Don't forget your pants, Vicky. Off I go for my swim.
Going down.
I'm walking along the New River Path to the West Reservoir in London, N4, which is my favourite swim spot. Hello, birds! Past the playground and the swans and the geese and the submerged traffic cones and old bikes, it's urban. Hello, ducks, hello! Here I go, over the bridge, across into the car park. I think that's a robin. Hello, hello, I've come to check in. Have you got my name?
I do indeed. Got you, Vicky. You are good to go.
Thank you very much. What temperature is it, Jo?
It's 11 degrees today.
Yee, that's warm.
Tropical. Balmy.
Balmy indeed.
Balmy for an April.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy your swim.
I will. Just hear the splashes of the swimmers. What an amazing spot. It's only 20 minutes from central London by tube and a short walk from where I live. I love my swim spot. If you'd like to tell us about your journey to your swim spot, please do get in touch via social media, or you can find our email on the website at www.swimout.net.
That's it for today. Listen out for the next podcast in the autumn. Today's episode has been all about peace, and we wish all our listeners peace and love wherever you are in the world. It's goodbye from me and my dog Beans.
And goodbye from me. Swim out and swim safe.
Thanks for listening.